Alrighty, everybody, how y'all doing? We're on episode 9 of the Trash Mix Podcast.
Here episode 9.
I can't believe we're on episode 9.
Crazy.
We actually made it. Some people would probably give up by now, but we didn't give up.
No, you know, and thankfully, I think the people are digging it.
Yeah, we've gotten this far, and it's already been like almost a year later, so yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. I'm excited. What are we talking about today, though?
Well, you know, when we were discussing like topics and shit for the season, we were like, one of the things I had hit you up was like, you know, we got to do something for the ladies because not only do we love the ladies, but you know, they play a big important role in Mexico's rich cinema history.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So we wanted to talk about two women today, and hopefully this becomes an ongoing segment that we can do to give back to International Women's Month.
Yeah, that's a good idea. When you pitched it to me at first, I was like, yeah, that's a great idea. And then it intertwined with International Women's Month. So I was like, oh, hell yeah, perfect.
It just fits.
I was like, you know what? Yeah, we got to do this more. So it's like, this is an ongoing series. So, you know, not a special type of episode, but it's like, it's going to be a theme for future episodes for sure.
Yeah, because I mean, I think when we first talked about it too, I had to hit you up like, is there any women behind the camera that we can talk about? And I know you said there wasn't really much in that part of.
Yeah, there isn't really much. There's a lot of writers for sure, but not so much behind the camera, other than the one that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, not so much, but there's been plenty in front of the camera, and you know, we all fucking love them.
Okay, yeah. how can you not, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So today's episode, we're going to be talking about two pretty big names. One of them is going to be Isela Vega, which I'm sure a lot of listeners probably already know who she is have seen her.
Oh, yeah, internationally.
Yeah, she's an international star. And the second woman we're going to talk about is Angelica Chaín.
Oh, yeah, my favorite.
She's gorgeous.
I'm not a big blonde guy, but yeah.
You know, when we get to her half of the show, I definitely want to talk about it because in the movie we're talking about, man, she looks so good in all black, man. She had like the black wig on and stuff. She was hot.
Yeah.
But okay, so let's get into it, right? Or what are we calling this? Las Bellas de Trash Mix, right?
Las Bellas de Trash Mix. So this will be part one, and then part two will come out who knows when later on. But yeah, it'll be like an ongoing kind of thing we're gonna do.
All right, so let's start running into it, right? So the first woman we're going to talk about is Isela Vega. And again, I'm sure most of you already know who she is, maybe have seen something without even knowing she was in it. But her name, you know, she's born Isela Vega Durazo. She was born November 5th, 1939 in Hermosillo, Sonora. You know, I mean, I guess we can go into her family, right? So she's like one of six children of the family.
Wow.
And I know, right? Kind of crazy. But you know, she kind of grew up, you know, as a working class family. She grew up on a farm, you know, living that life, I guess. And I can't imagine that it's any easy to live a farm life in 1930s Mexico, or actually 1940s when she was growing up.
Yeah.
You know, but she soon began her career in modeling in the 50s. I believe she was titled Miss something, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, she was in a pageant, right?
Yeah, damn it, I can't believe I forgot. But yeah, so she won the Miss whatever in 1957, I think it was. Mm. And from there, she got her acting career going in 1960. Which her first movie would have been Verano Violento. Violento.
Yeah, that's usually how it starts with these actresses. They always start off doing pageants or modeling, and then that's where they get the attention from producers. So this is a perfect example.
As long as you look good, right? We'll put you in a movie. Mm-hmm. And that she did, but she was more than just that. Her first movie is Verano Violento, which was directed by Alfonso Corona. And you know, she had, I guess it was a smaller role. She played a woman named Carmen in there. And from there, her career just kind of blossomed into what we later knew her for. She began doing music in 1969. She had her first record, De Mi Departamento. And that was released on Peerless Records, which is, you know, it's a Mexican label. It's a lot of... a lot of Mexican releases were put out on that label. I have plenty 45s and stuff. And actually, when I was listening to that record on the way here today, just to kind of get in the mood for her. I don't, have you heard that record?
I haven't, no, but I think I know what you're talking about, though.
It's pretty good. She has, you know, I guess it's it would be considered like Latin pop for the time, I guess.
Yeah,
like, kind of cheesecakey. Yeah. And immediately you put it on, and fans of Serge Gainsbourg would immediately recognize it because she has a cover of, I don't know how to pronounce it, Je t'aime mon plus.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure some French person is going to get mad at me butchering that. But yeah, so she did a cover of that. And of course, she had, you know, original songs. But she also wrote for soundtracks, which I think the majority of people who know her are going to know her from Sam Peckinpah's Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, which she did a song on there, Benny's song, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
And I think that's where people are probably going to know her from.
Voy a contarles la historia. Dun, 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 dun. De un caballero de ley. Que llega un día cualquiera de los United States. Benito a todo tiraba. Ven, 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 ven.
Great movie, but that's, you know, that's far from being her best movie, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, but that is like a really iconic movie and very important for her career too.
Very important for her career. Yeah, so that came shortly after her first international role, which was in 1973, which that was called Deadly Trackers, and that was directed by Barry Scheer. Because well, I think so that was 73, and I think Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia is 1974, right? Or is it later than that? I think it's 74. Yeah. And from then on, I mean, she became just a huge iconic, she was a sex symbol. She was a model. She was the first, Latin woman to be on the cover of Playboy. I mean, that's you know, that's pretty iconic.
Oh, yeah.
And from then on, she just kind of, you know, she blew up. She started producing in 1980. And I think people know this movie, too, Navajeros.
Oh, yeah.
Which is directed by Eloy de la Iglesia, which Severn put out a really nice version of that movie on Blu-ray. If you haven't seen that, highly recommended. Did you that one at the festival
that was the Trash Mix,
right? Yeah, fucking amazing movie.
Yeah, since it's a Mexican co-production, yeah.
Mexican Spain co-production. Yeah. That's a they call it the kinky movie.
Yeah.
Highly recommended. Seek it out. I'm sure Severin is not sold out on that yet, but you know, go hit up Jaime or Ethan or whoever is at your local convention because that movie's a fucking banger.
Oh yeah.
But then that led to her directing her first movie, which is the movie we're going to talk about today. 1986, she wrote, directed, and produced Las Amantes del Señor de la Noche.
Which is Lovers of the Lord of the Night.
Fucking amazing movie.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one.
For
a first and only directed movie, yeah.
Yeah, if this is like your one and only, she fucking nailed it. Like, it's an amazing movie. But again, she acted all the way throughout her entire career, really. She did plenty of novelas. I think her last screen credit was in 2020, which was a Netflix show called La Casa de los Flores, which I haven't actually watched, to be honest with
me
you.
Either.
But
a lot of people always tell me about it. Like, you should watch it. I'd be like, yeah, sure. And I never did. Or it's like, I canceled Netflix. I don't know. So, yeah, it's just... But I know people really love that show for sure, yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I've read nothing but great things about it. But it's just, I haven't sat down to actually watch it. So, I mean, that goes to show you. So, her first movie was in the 60s. Her last acting credit was 60 years later. I mean, that's a 60-year career in entertainment.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Absolutely crazy. She's won plenty of awards. She has 5 Ariel Awards under her belt. She was nominated multiple times. She was nominated for Las Reglas del Juego. She was nominated for Traiganme el Cabeza de Alfredo Garcia, which we just talked about, Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia. Mm-hmm. El Jeremias. And she won, her first win was for Alfredo Ripstein's La Viuda Negra.
Oh, yeah. We kind of mentioned that in the Mario Mother.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, very important movie for her. A really bad-looking movie for Mario Mother.
And
which is ironic.
You said that he did not like his role in that movie, right? Like he liked it,
but he just... It like kind of made him look bad because that movie just got so controversial. So he kind of just, you know, didn't really want to be part of it after that, you know. It made him look bad, I guess, in other words.
It was too art house for him.
Too art house and then just too controversial. He was just like, yeah. But for her, it was a good thing. You know, she won an award and people love her for that movie even.
It's a great movie.
It is a good movie. Yeah, oh, yeah. But Mario Mother, like I said, he is just like, no. That was his thing. In every interview they brought, he's like, oh, yeah, great movie. But, yeah. Sustained in my career.
He's like, give me a gun and I want to just shoot. Yeah, I don't want to play a priest or none of this shit.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I'm not doing that anymore.
She also won for Herod's Law as a supporting actress. She won for Fuera del Cielo, and she also won for Las Horas Contigo. And she also won a Lifetime Achievement in 2017, which...
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and thankfully she was alive to receive that because there's nothing worse than seeing someone get a lifetime achievement posthumously. You know, we got to celebrate these people while they're alive, you know, especially someone like Gisela Vega, whose contributions were, you know, I mean, immeasurable. She was in entertainment for 60 fucking years. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a long fucking time.
And she worked with a lot of big names, too.
Huge names. I mean, some. All right, let's do a little list of some people that she worked with, right? Yeah. So, you know, she won her first Ariel in working with Arturo Ripstein. Mm-hmm. She worked with René Cardona Jr.
Who didn't?
Yeah. She worked with Sam Peckinpah, obviously. Mm-hmm. Cantinflas, who is a huge, legendary Mexican comedian. Pedro Armendariz,
legendary,
yeah. Glenn Ford, Boris Karloff, Chris Christopherson. She worked with Mil Máscaras, Mario Almada, of course, like we just said, Warren Oates. She worked with Emilio El Indio Fernandez, who, you know, rumor is he is the model of the statue for the Oscar awards. And that's just a small sample of some legendary names that she worked with. So, I mean,
but that's enough to tell you that, yeah, she's worked for a long time and worked with a lot of great people.
Exactly.
Yeah, very talented actors.
And someone of that nature, it's like, you're bound to work with the greats and the legends of Mexican cinema when you've been around for that long. And, to be a woman, no less, and have, you know, the, important roles that she was able to play. And I know, you know, people probably think of Isela Vega and just think, oh, she got naked, you know, whatever. She definitely accepted that. You know, she wore that with pride. She considered herself a sex symbol.
Yeah, just kind of a hippie, too, in other words. I wouldn't say a hippie, per se, but she was part of that whole, you know, counterculture type of style.
Yeah. And, you know, it served her well. And she basically she had her way, like she was able to maneuver through her career the way she wanted to do it, and not a lot of people, especially in Mexico, right, can say that.
We should leave that in there.
I'm gonna leave it in. We're next to there's a taquero next door to where we're recording for a 1-year-old's birthday party. So, and you know, Mexican 1-year-old birthday parties go crazy. So
yeah, now there's a corn man.
Let's do just a quick little selected filmography here to give people ideas of some movies that they can search out for Isela Vega, right? So Verano Violento, which was her first role, 1960. Mm-hmm. Enigma de Muerte, 1969. That's when she worked with Mil Máscaras. Yeah. The Deadly Trackers, which was her first international role, which led her to her next role, Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, 1974. 1977, she worked with Arturo Ripstein in La Viuda Negra. Navajeros, as we just said, in 1980. Las Amantes del Señor de la Noche, which we're talking about today. Gente Bien, 1997, was a long-standing novella in Mexico where she, you know, she had a recurring role there. La Ley de Herodes, a.k.a. Herod's Law. Fuera del Cielo in 2006. Infierno, which is a fucking classic. If you haven't seen, I think that one's pretty widely available.
Oh yeah, you can watch that anywhere.
Yeah, so
Tubi, Vix, YouTube probably. Playing on TV right now.
Las Horas Contigo, and then of course her final role, Casa de Flores, in 2020, which was a Netflix production. So,
yeah, a lot of good stuff there for everybody too.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of, you know, touch on different styles of movies and stuff that she worked on. So, yeah, I mean, that's just a quick little background on who Isela Vega was, and I guess we can, you know, you want to talk about the next woman, or you want to go into the movie first?
It's up to you. What do you want to do? What do you think will work better?
Yeah, let's go into the movie.
Let's go to the movie.
So the movie that we're talking about is Las Amantes del Señor de la Noche. And, you know, I was lucky enough to see this in theater at the Academy Museum when Abraham Castillo did the Mexico Maleficarum, and Armando was there,
I even got invited to the closing reception.
Damn.
Which I met her daughter. Shaula. Yeah, I met Shaula. Abraham introduced me to her. She's like super nice. And then obviously when she was on stage talking about her mom and everything, that was super awesome.
Oh yeah, that was She was pretty instrumental in getting that, because I don't know if this is ever gonna play again in public.
Yeah, but from what I understand, the movie was just sitting, remember, in Churubusco, you know, the elements and everything. There's a lot of legal tape around it. But yeah, somehow the Academy and then Abraham, they managed to get the movie restored and then screened it for the, you know, for his programming.
And, you know, this movie, you know, when it screened, you know, I had only seen pictures of it. I had never seen any clips of it.
It was one of those movies that a lot of people knew of but really never watched, just because it was so hard to get. Especially, like, even now, like, you can't really just fucking find a copy.
Yeah.
Because it's so rare to find on tape. There's no disc. Used to air on TV, kind of. Not so much. But even then, it's like such an obscurity. So when this was, you know, playing at the Academy, it's like, I have to fucking be there.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's funny is I bought a ticket already knowing, but then Abraham's like, hey, I'm going to send you an email for the opening and the closing reception. I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, oh, shit, I could have just fucking went for free, but yeah.
He secondhand scalped it to someone else is what he did.
But yeah, so of course I was like, either way, I'm going to go, you know. And that was like the one that I was going to go for sure. I was like, I got to see this new restoration. And I need to kind of revisit that movie because I barely remembered much of it, too. Because that was a thing. But, yeah.
So, Las Amantes del Señor de la Noche was written, directed, and produced by Isela Vega. But also, I guess, co-written by Hugo Argüelles, who I wasn't really too familiar with. I don't know. I don't really know. Maybe he was just brought in as, like, as a writing partner to get certain things done. Who knows? But it was shot by Angel, I can't even pronounce this. What is this? Bilbatua?
Yeah, Bilbatua. Yeah. An amazing cinematographer. Yeah.
Crazy, right?
This guy's amazing.
Some movies that you would know him for would be like Perro Callejero, Muerte o Sangre Fría.
Debajo, Tiempo de Lobos. Yeah,
crazy. Yeah, crazy filmography.
Yeah.
And also a fucking stacked cast.
Yeah, that's the crazy part about this movie is like there's such a great cast in the movie.
Here's just a couple of them, right? So Isela Vega, obviously, she plays Amparo. We have Emilio El Indio Fernandez, who plays Don Venustiano. Crazy name. I feel like if I had a dog, I'd name him Venustiano. That's a sick ass name. Yeah. Elena de Aro, which would she played Venus. Irma Serrano, aka La Tigresa, super super famous woman.
That was actually her rival at one point, remember?
They
were rivals, but then they somehow just became acquainted, and then they ended up starring in this movie. I mean, they did another movie before that, if I recall.
From what I remember is that she basically called in a favor from Irma. This is Isela that I'm talking about. Basically, like, hey, you owe me for some past drama shit, and basically told her you're gonna play this fucking role, and she said okay, I'll do it. And she plays Saurina, she plays the witch, I guess you could say, in this movie. It also has Lilia Prado, who plays Selena, another Golden Age actress, crazy resume, over 100 screen credits. It also has Isela's son, Arturo Vasquez. He plays the love interest of Venus.
And then I believe he does the songs in the movie too, those like pop sounding songs.
Oh, does he really?
Yeah, I think those are his music. He's also a singer, yeah.
That's sick.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just a little, I guess he's integral, but not really. Andres Garcia, he plays El Cazador, who is like the...
he's like the lover, right?
Of
Venus's mom, right?
Yeah, so we'll get into that in a little bit, because there was a point where I thought it was Amparo's love, but then, you know, so we'll get into it, right? So this movie is, if I can sum it up before we talk about it, is basically a full core movie mashed together with like a teenage love drama. It kind of plays in two parts, where the first half is more melodrama than a full core or a fantasy movie.
Yeah, that's what's funny, is that it just starts off like that, and then immediately, like, you know, it starts building up. You're like, oh shit, where's this going? Then it gets pretty fucking wild.
Yeah, it gets pretty wild. It starts off with like this really sick monologue, which I'll play a clip for.
Le echaba la culpa a las ceremonias demoníacas con que celebraban la Semana Santa los indios allá afuera del pueblo. Es que los coras ebrios de peyote se convierten en demonios, cercan y vigilan la iglesia donde tienen preso a Jesús Venado. Así le dicen ellos Jesús Venado, combinando el cristianismo con el paganismo. Desde entonces he pensado seriamente que los humanos nos relacionamos así, bueno, malo y sacrificio, Dios, diablo y sacrificio. Aquí se ven donde toman el pueblo y el drama comienza.
But, you know, kind of talks about paganism against Christianity and the Christian church in Mexico and stuff. I don't have to break down what paganism is for people, but, you know, and it really kind of sets the tone, because, like you said, this is a folk horror movie that deals with witchcraft and black magic and spells and all kinds of shit. And, we're just immediately introduced into that. And we're introduced to the two main women, which would be Amparo and Venus, where they're talking about, you know, I guess it's Venus is asking Amparo, you know, tell me about my mom. You know, I want to know about my mom and who she was, and, you know, why did my dad hate me? You know, the typical single child syndrome, right?
Mm-hmm.
My dad hates me, which I guess he kind of did. I don't know if he did or not, though.
He just seemed kind of distant from her, if anything.
He was very aloof with like family dynamics.
Yeah.
Like wanted her to marry her cousin, and basically just didn't treat her as his own child, really.
Just like a product, basically. That's what it was. He just treated her like a, you know, like, hey, you have to do this. That's it.
And I'm sure that stems from the love triangle that we'll talk about in a little bit, because, you know, Venus's mom ended up into a love triangle with El Cazador and Amparo. But I don't know. He's like, she's asking her about, you know, mom, tell me about my mom and the owl that you know, that was constantly showing up. And of course, owls are seen as, you know, spiritual guides or wisdom in, you know, black magic and witchcraft and stuff. So I feel like every time you see an owl in this movie, it's always with intent. It's probably the ghost of Venus's mom popping up and be like, hey, I'm watching you.
Yeah, good call. Yeah.
Cuéntame de mi mamá.
Ay, otra vez.
Cuéntame cuando se murió y que cantó la lechuza.
Pues tenías como un mes de nacida y empezaron a pasar cosas muy extrañas en la casa. La lechuza y luego el perro anduvo escarbe y escarbe por toda la casa. No, si los animales ven y oyen cosas que nosotros no vemos ni oímos.
¿Y por qué dicen que mi papá la mató? ¿Porque tenía un amante?
Esas son cosas que te decían en la escuela para hacerte llorar.
Pues algo ha de haber pasado, porque yo no siento que mi papá me quiera como una hija.
And then, of course, we, you know, no good love story has a clean love, right? So Venus and Pedro, who is her love interest, played by Isela's son, you know, his mom fucking hates Venus.
Yeah, literally immediately when we meet the mom, she's just like, she's showing her distaste for her.
She's low class. It's kind of like a social drama, right? Because it's like, obviously, Pedro's mom, Selena, feels that Pedro's way too good for Venus. You know, she's like this byproduct of probably an affair child, you know. Mm-hmm. So she really treats her like shit, which is, you know, she gets what she's kind of, what she's asking for later, but it's kind of fucked up. And, you know, she wants to send Pedro to New Orleans to go to school, to some prestigious school. I couldn't even catch it. The copy we watched was kind of crappy, so I couldn't really hear.
But I remember, the New Orleans, I was like, that's so random.
It made me think, like, why New Orleans? Was that like a purposeful like location, because New Orleans is like known for its voodooism and shit like that, or was it just some random fuck it? I know what New Orleans is. Let's send it to New Orleans.
Ahí viene la Venus a quitarte el tiempo. Ya no la ilusiones tanto, hijito. Tú no estás en edad de pensar en serio. Lo primero son tus estudios.
¿Está bien?
Acabo de hablar con el hermano Alexis. La Universidad de Loyola es muy exclusiva. No cualquiera es aceptado allí. Gracias a que el hermano Alexis ha hecho una excepción con nosotros porque pertenece a la familia de tu papá, es una oportunidad que no se te va a volver a presentar, mijito. Hazme caso.
Yeah, because he goes to New Orleans and he becomes like susceptible to all the spells and fucking sorcery that they put on him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
For sure. it kind of intertwines from there,
This is all setup stuff too. So this is all in the first like 10 minutes of the movie. Venus, of course, you know, she's finally realizes that Pedro is no longer going to be with her because he's going to move. And Pedro, you know, typical asshole fashion, is like, yeah, you know, it's only a year. I'll come back. Like, you know, that's no big deal. And of course, he doesn't come back.
They never do.
They never do, right? He I'll send you love letters and I'll call you. And nope, we learn that he ends up with another Hyena.
As always. That's the way it goes.
One of the things about this movie that it really paints El Indio as like a fragile dying man, which you normally wouldn't see him in this type of role. Like, he's normally like a fucking, you know, machismo.
Yeah, he's very serious, and he's just, you know, he's in action, I guess, in other words.
Yeah.
And here he's always just sitting.
Or in bed, like,
yeah, or he's just in like blankets in bed. And yeah, there shit. We go. Like, he's sitting, or he's just in bed. Like, he's not really doing anything. He's already old, which is, you know, to say he was already in real life.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So I think that's another part of the reason why.
Why he was like, "Fuck it, I'll play that role."
But I'm not gonna get up.
Yeah, you get me for this wimpy role, but I'm gonna be in bed the whole time. Exactly. You can. But he really does have kind of like a weak character, because you know, when we're introduced to him, he's, you know, he learns that he's sick, whatever. Amparo is his caretaker. And he keeps asking her, like, you know, what was the deal with this fucking man and my wife? I know she was having an affair. And Amparo keeps trying to play it down. Like, no, he was my lover. You know, he loved me. He didn't love your wife. And there's no real subtext there. It's obvious that his disdain for, you know, Venus, his daughter, is spawned from that, when he caught his wife having an affair with the with another man, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a really cool sequence there where when he's asking Amparo about the hunter, that's when we kind of, you know, you start to see like the Amparo's, I guess, mind kind of twirling there, because at this point we don't really know who El Cazador is. Like, we don't know if he really was, you know, her love interest. Was he actually having an affair with Don Venustiano's wife? But he fucking kills him. He's like, fuck you, I'm gonna kill her and this fool. Uh-huh. And I don't know, man. It's like, that scene was kind of sick, actually. Like, he walks up and just fucking Charles Bronson style, just bah, bah, just starts blasting and shit.
Es a usted al que le gusta retorcerse la mente y torturarse, no me culpe a mí.
Han pasado muchos años y desde entonces me tienes agarrado con esa duda. Yo sé que me voy a morir muy pronto, pero quiero que me digas, ¿mi mujer me engañaba, sí o no? Porque tú eres la única que lo sabe.
Cuando yo quise hablar, usted se gastó una fortuna en que no me escucharan. ¿Qué quiere que le diga ahora?
Pues el cazador es el tal Conrado García. ¿Venía a verte a ti o venía a ver a mi mujer?
Tal vez a las dos.
And then, of course, right after that, Amparo goes through like a, I guess like a ritual, and this is a vegans beware. There's a live chicken that gets fucking murdered in this movie,
right in front of you. Yeah.
I completely forgot about that when I was watching it the other day. I was like, oh shit!
I remember at the academy, everybody was just like, everybody was terrified. I was just like, it was like funny because the lady cuts it, right?
Yeah,
I got yeah, it. That one lady, and yep. then she cuts it, and I remember she's just laughing, and then the blood spattering.
Yeah, there, she fucking chops off the chicken's mm-hmm. head. Just grabs it and starts pouring all the blood all over Isla Vega, and they're like people, smearing it. Yeah, all over
I remember
themselves.
That kind of people were like, "Oh, what?" Some people were kind of laughing, kind of not wanting to laugh. I was just fucking cracking up because I was just perfect. This is what I wanted to see.
That's what I thought it was going to be the whole time. Like I wanted to see like black magic crazy shit, but yeah. It doesn't really get that crazy until about the 40-minute mark. Mm-hmm. This was like this scene where the help chops off the chicken's head is. What plays as the transition between teenage love melodrama and fantasy folk horror, because you know, for those who know, you know, it's kind of tradition or not tradition, but superstition in Mexico, chopping off the head of a black chicken and using its blood is kind of like a cleansing or like a transition period, which obviously from then. Amparo kind of, you know, she takes Venus under her wing and introduces her to Saurina, who was the witch yeah. of the town, and really sets the tone for the second half.
Oh, yeah. This is like basically the Tigresa's movie right here.
Yeah, yeah. When she finally shows up on screen, it's like, I mean, she commands like the movie. Like, it's no nonsense. She doesn't fuck around. Basically gives Venus the spells and the rituals to do to get Pedro to come back and be her love slave. Not even just to come back and be in love with her, but to be her love slave.
Yeah.
Like he has no say in this. But you know, she does it, and of course, being a teenager, you don't really pay attention or you don't really care. You just want what you want. So she completely fucks up the ritual.
Oh yeah.
¿Qué te trae por acá? ¿Penas de amor? Yo puedo arreglar tu futuro, pero tienes que desearlo verdaderamente. Te habrán dicho que tengo pacto con el Señor de la Noche. ¿No tienes miedo? No hay peor miedo que el miedo mismo. Pero a veces la fuerza del mal es lo mejor que uno tiene. Platícame.
Estoy muy confundida.
Por culpa del hombre que tú quieres.
Sí, sé que me ama. Estoy segura de ello. Bueno, no es cierto. Mejor dicho, he venido para que usted me asegure que va a volver.
Pues si haces lo que yo te ordene, el hombre que tú quieras te servirá de esclavo.
Solo me interesa uno.
Y no te corresponde.
Sí, pero se fue hoy y tengo miedo de que me olvide. Quiero que regrese.
Piénsalo bien. ¿De veras quieres que regrese?
Sí.
Es tu amor mayor que tu miedo.
Mi único miedo es que no regrese.
Toma, pues. Tal vez tengas que hacer cosas que te asombren o no te gusten. ¿Quieres que él vuelva?
Haré lo que sea.
Ahí donde dice Señor de la Noche, lee, que yo te oiga. ¿Cómo se llama él?
Pedro.
Pedro. Debe ser insensible. Los nombres, por lo general, llevan algo de la persona que los lleva. Por ejemplo, John. Saurina. ¿Qué quiere decir? Quien todo lo sabe, la adivina. Tú, Venus, el planeta del amor.
No, Yo me llamo Venus por Venustiana, como mi papá.
Venustiana. Vaya nombrecito. Lee, que yo te oiga. Fuerte la invocación.
Señor de la noche, haz que Pedro venga donde yo me encuentro. Pedro, ¿dónde estás que no te veo? No me envías mensajeros. Enviarlos quiero con 3 liebres pacientes, 3 cerdos corrientes y 3 diablos de los más sapientes, para que te digan de mis males y te cuenten de mis bienes, y te corten el taco y el vaso y la vena del espinazo. De la cuerda cañonera 7 diablos te tiren de ella. Que te traben y te tengan sin dejarte de reposar hasta que te vengas conmigo a casar.
Sigue, ¿por qué paras? Los conjuros hay que hacerlos, con fe. O si no quieres que él vuelva. ¡Sigue!
Barrabás, Satanás, Belcebú y Lucifer. Venid y llamad a las 7 capitanías de los diablos y enviad al diablo cojuelo para que me traiga a Pedro.
Ahora repite conmigo. En nombre de Belial, Astarot y Lucifer.
En nombre de Belial, Astarot y Lucifer.
En nombre de Adonai.
En nombre de Adonai.
Que en el corazón de Pedro entréis.
Que en el corazón de Pedro entréis.
Y sangre, fuego y tierra le deis.
Y guerra y sangre y fuego le deis.
Para que no pueda parar hasta que me venga a buscar.
Para que no pueda parar hasta que me venga a buscar.
¿En mí? Este conjuro lo vas a repetir diario, 13 días. Cuando no se escuchen las campanas rompen los conjuros. Por eso los cristianos se pasan la vida tocando campana. No, llévatelo. Apréndetelo de memoria hasta que lo digas sin titubear. Solo así te escucharán quienes te deben de escuchar.
¿Y luego?
Primero haz los 13 días y luego regresas a verme. Llévate esto y tenlo cerca de ti cuando hagas tus invocaciones. Envuélvelo en esto. Llévate ese dinero. No me interesa. El de ella no. Vámonos. Gracias, Sabrina.
And then that's when, yeah, shit really goes crazy right then and there. You know, like Saurina's house is all decked out. And I guess there's another, in that scene too, there's like owls and frogs all over the place again. And I'm sure it was probably Venus's mom, like, you know, stay away from this lady. Maybe she has a history with her or what. I'm pretty sure Amparo had a history with her too, because, I mean, Amparo obviously already knew her. And, you know, knew that Saurina would be able to, I guess, bring Pedro back to her life. But
yeah, that's actually a good call. Yeah, I didn't think about that before.
When I was watching it, it made me think, like, I wonder if Amparo at some point had gone to Saurina to cast a spell on El Cazador, the lover, and either it didn't work or maybe she didn't go through with it. I don't know. But there's a really good scene there where Venus is it's late at night. She had gone through her rituals, and I don't know if she's like half asleep or she's in a sleep, but it's like a dream sequence where she thinks she's having sex with Pedro, but it ends up being, I guess, like an incantation of the devil, right? Like it's like.
Yeah, but then it turns out it's what was it? The gardener?
I thought it was her cousin, right?
Yeah, oh, there
her
we go.
Cousin, her cousin, Abel.
Yeah,
her
cousin, yeah.
Who, of course, her dad wanted her to marry.
Yeah.
And so there was already, like, you know, family drama there, right? Because a la prima se arrima, you know, in Mexico. And she fucking stabbed this fool and killed him. But I don't know. I mean, the scene is so dark, and I watched it on a Russian bootleg. So I couldn't really tell what was happening. But I mean, for what I figure was that she fucking was trying to kill the devil.
Yeah. But it's not the.
But it's not the devil, cousin, yeah. And it ends up being the cousin
who was assaulting her. Yeah,
and that's what exactly he was trying to. Well, I don't know if he ever really assaulted. He was trying to, because when Don Venustiano told him, like, yeah, you know, I want you to marry my daughter, and you know, you guys will take over the terrenos and all that shit. So he was trying to. She wanted no part of it, but I don't know if he ever actually, you know, physically did anything with her. At least not that I saw in the copy that I saw. Yeah. But and then from there, you know, the fucking town basically revolts against her. They fucking they want to lynch her. They go up to the house after Venustiano dies. They want to fucking, you know, they want to kill her, but Amparo basically sacrifices herself and calls upon the Lord of the Night, you know, Satanas, to basically take her instead of Venus, so that Venus can continue to live.
Saurina, mira, esto que me diste va a hacer que me escuche Saurina. Saurina, sé que eres capaz de eso y más. Ayúdame, Saurina. Ayúdame, Saurina. Yo sé que me escuchas. Saurina. Pues no me importa que me abandonen mis santos. No me importa, yo lo que quiero es que no le pase nada a mi niña. Saurina, ayúdame. Dile al Señor de la Noche que me tome a mí. Que me tome a mí. Saurina, dile al Señor de la Noche que me tome a mí. Que me lleve. Dile a Dios, Saurina. No, mi niña. Mi niña. No, mi niña.
And to me, it almost seemed like she did that because she finally realized the cazador didn't love her. The house, she had no say in it. You know, when Venustiano died, he basically left her out of the will. She got absolutely nothing.
And, yeah, she kind of just wasted her life raising this girl, you know?
Yeah, and it wasn't even her daughter to raise.
So it's kind of like, fuck it, I need to just go.
So it was really sad, but it's also really gruesome.
Yeah, I remember that.
Spoiler alert, they fucking hack Isela Vega into pieces. They fucking, you know, you see her arms, her legs, her head, she was decapitated. Yeah. And the whole time, Venus is on a tree watching this, and there's an owl watching Venus at the same time. So again, you know, the owl plays a big part, and I'm sure it was her mom. But in like kind of cut in between that, you see like a guy coming up on a horse. Now, I originally thought that, oh, maybe this is the fucking devil coming to claim, you know, Amparo's body. Mm. It ends up being fucking Pedro. The fucking spell finally worked.
Yeah, he came back.
But he came back as a punker.
Yeah. He's like an all black. His hair's like kind of fixed up. But that ending was weird because remember I told you this earlier before we recorded. It's like, I think this ending's different than the Academy one.
I feel like it is because I didn't remember this ending, but I couldn't find another version.
Me either, because everything was the same ending, which is, you know, with him, but then he had like the makeup on.
Yeah.
But the Academy, remember, it just ends with him. They show him and then the credits are rolling with his song playing.
Yeah, exactly.
But this one has like the whole like him there, but then he has like that whole makeup shit on.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, I don't remember this.
He had like his Ziggy Stardust makeup on. That, like, he looked
that,
like a
that,
punker.
That totally threw me off. I was like, wait, what in the hell? I don't remember this from the Academy. So I don't know. I guess there's two endings.
I mean, the mystery continues.
Yeah, they end the same, but it's just like, yeah, the appearance was different.
Yeah, it was different. And, you know, hopefully this movie can get released eventually. I feel like this would be a great Severin release for another addition to like their full horror box sets.
Yeah, I'm surprised it wasn't. See, I kept thinking that was probably gonna be one of them one day, but so far nothing. I don't know.
Hopefully we can, you know, we can talk to David and be like, hey man, you gotta go after this. Who even knows if this movie's available to license? Because if the Academy had to go through hoops to fucking play this movie, then who knows how easy it would be to release it.
That could be the situation. Arturo might be involved. Wink, wink. The son. I think I told you the drama, Joey.
Yeah. We'll keep that off the airways, but you know, hopefully this gets released because this really is an amazing movie.
Oh yeah.
I really think that
if more people saw it, people would fucking dig it for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
That would become like a new favorite for sure.
Yeah, I think people really would dig it because it does play it's like two different movies in one. You got the teenage melodrama, as we said. Granted, the horror doesn't really start till halfway through the movie, but that doesn't matter because it really does take a hold of, and it really does, it really does draw and lean on the drama aspect and why we even care about these characters to begin with.
Yeah, but it builds up really good and a good story and very graphic too.
Surprising. I didn't remember it being that graphic, but
yeah, but no, it's pretty crazy.
I went back and I was like, I don't know, when I first saw it, I went to my letterbox and I was like, why did I say this was a black comedy on my letterbox? I must have seen something that made me laugh internally and thought, this is hilarious. Well, that
was the funny part, because remember when Abraham was talking to Shaula, the daughter, she was like, yeah, there's a lot of dark humor in there, and this is like humor my mom was into. So it's like, okay, I kind of see why. But it's not very appropriate humor. So I kind of understand what she was saying. Because there are certain scenes where it's like, it's not going to catch people's, you know, right away, it's going to be like, oh, I think that was supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
So I kind of caught that, on some scenes at least. Especially the chicken scene, it's like, it's not supposed to be funny because, you know, she's supposed to be doing a ritual. But then it's like, it's kind of funny just the way it builds up and everything. It's kind of shocking. So it's like, yeah, dark humor.
And I feel like the humor comes from, like, the side character in this movie. Like, you know, the help when she chops off
the head. Yeah, it's not mostly the main cast. It's just, like, the people on the side. Even Elindia, like, even his character's kind of just... Like, it's not, he's not funny, but it's just like, he's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
This old man that's just like, whatever. I have to have my own way, you know.
And then he basically sold out to the enemy. He ends up selling the house to Selena's family, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, we didn't even talk about that when Selena died. There's like a scene where, Venus goes to Saurina by herself, and she gets a voodoo doll.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, you know, you attack it like this, and so she's stabbing it. And then the next scene, Selena, who's been a bitch to Venus the whole movie, is like standing on a stool or some shit, and she like trips and fucking gets impaled. Pretty nasty too, actually. It's pretty. There's like blood and shit. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah. Horror fans are gonna love that part.
Yeah. She got what she deserved because she was a complete.
Minute we see this woman, she's already hating on her, and it's like, damn, fuck this. Sorry, guys.
I know this is an episode for the ladies, but we're over here saying.
But she was a really bad person for sure. So yeah. I think that justifies the word. But yeah.
She absolutely was. She was a horrible person. Did not give a fuck about anything other than her own prestige, which. Who knows if she even had any prestige? I mean, she was like, she worked at like a veterinarian clinic. But yeah, she was savage. She got what she fucking deserved. Amparo, on the other hand, she didn't. She went out, you know, sacrificing herself. But
yeah, that part was like, man, I feel bad for this woman.
I found it interesting too that this was shot in Michoacán. I've never been to Michoacán, so I didn't know.
Me too. Actually, like I knew it was filmed there, but I was like, oh, I don't recognize this like kind of part of Michoacán at least, because it's all wooded area mostly.
Yeah.
But it was still really nice to look at the beautiful scenery and everything.
In Sahuayo and Jiquilpan, Michoacán. Never been. Never heard of them.
I've never been to them, but I know of them. But yeah, it's all mostly wooded area. Yeah.
And then I was trying to look into Producciones Cinematográficas Fénix, because that's the production house that put this together. But I mean, as far as I can see, this was the only movie that had them attached to it. So I don't know. Do you know anything about that? It was that like her production
house? That's probably hers. Yeah, I would think, because I couldn't find nothing either. So more than likely, that's just hers. That's usually how it goes with these production companies. So, like when you see these names, it's just something that they made up, basically. So that's probably hers, more than likely.
Probably. I mean, seeing that it was her only, like, director credit, this is probably just fucking...
And then I remember in the Academy, Abraham was like, yeah, so, you know, he did this movie, and that was it. After she was done, that was it for her. She said, I'm not doing that anymore.
I mean, I can't imagine that writing, directing, and producing all a movie yourself is...
It's crazy how she did this all on her own. But it's a good one. That's the thing, 1,000%. That's like... She's never made a whole movie by herself like that, and then for it to turn out like this, that's great.
And if I recall from, you know, when Abraham was doing the introduction keynote for this movie. Mm-hmm. I think he said that this spawned because of, you know, the lack of trust that she got in previous productions, right? Like, where she felt like people weren't really, like, giving her authority or listening to her.
Yeah, especially her being a woman. It's like, well, why do we need to listen to you, you know?
Yeah, so she's like, fuck these, well, I'm going to do them by myself.
Yeah, so she did it herself, you know? And she did a great job.
Well, hopefully it'll get released, like we said. Severin, I'm looking at you.
Severin, Indicator.
Indicator would be a really good release for this as well.
Yeah, either one, I mean, whoever. But cross your fingers, guys.
And if not, you know, if you guys want to watch a horrible copy online, you know, it's out there.
Yeah. Or if you have, like, I don't know, if you come across the VHS, which was released on Isela Vega Video, when she had a video label at the time.
I remember it was two episodes ago, I think you were talking about it. She had her own video label.
Yeah, and that was one of the movies that she put out. But it's super hard to find. And then when it is for sale, people, of course, want to flip it for a lot. And it's like, yeah, I'm not spending, you know, $200 on a tape right now.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, look, I always say this is one of those type of movies where I would only spend that money because it doesn't exist on any other format.
That is one of them.
And I'm sure that the tape looks a lot better than the crappy version I saw online.
Yeah, unfortunately. But I mean, at least it's there. On OK.ru. RU, whatever you want to call it. But yeah.
You know, those damn Russians, man. All right. Well, hopefully we sum that up good enough for people and they want to seek it out. But let's move on to the next woman. And I'm going to let Armando take control of this one. Who are we talking about next?
Talking about Angelica Chayin, the blonde bombshell from the 70s and 80s and kind of the 90s, but mostly the 70s and 80s for sure. 80s for sure. That's like her main career.
Her
biggest era for sure, yeah. So Angelica Chayin was born on May 24th, 1956 in Orizaba, Veracruz. Have you ever been over there?
I have not been to Veracruz, no.
Beautiful country. I mean, beautiful state. So she's half Mexican, half Lebanese. Her father's Lebanese and her mother's Mexican. She started off modeling for fotonovelas when she was a teenager. For those who don't know what a fotonovela is, it's basically like a photographic novel or comic book, whatever you want to call it. So she was really young when she was doing that. She was like,
is it like graphic novel?
Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, and it's just like pictures of them, you know, and then they put the little bubbles there. So she was doing stuff like that. She was a teenager. She wasn't even 18 yet. She was 17 when she did her first movie, which was El Santo, Blue Demon versus Dr. Frankenstein.
Banger.
It's a great one, yeah. I'm surprised how young she was.
That's kind of crazy to be your first movie. You're working with Santo and Blue Demon.
Yeah, and at 17 to top it off. She wasn't even 18 yet. Like, she's still really young. And, yeah, so 58 acting credits, and all of them mostly being just these sex comedies.
Yeah, the featuretta.
Literally, all of them. She was in all the fucking featuretta movies.
All the classics, at least.
Oh, yeah, all the main ones. And then she was known for dancing, so she did a little bit of a dancing, you know, during the clubs. And then she's known for her figure, of course, you know, beautiful body, you know, everywhere. Yeah, you know already. Yeah. You know already, guys. You don't have to explain it to me. Yeah, she has a beautiful body. And then, and then, of course, her blonde hair, you know. But she dyed her blonde hair, of course. She's not a natural blonde. But
What was her natural color?
I believe it's just like, yeah, she's a brunette.
Like a brunette or something?
I believe so, yeah. But she's always been known as being a blonde. And I think from what I recall, she still does dye it blonde. Even in her old age, she still dyes it blonde.
Yeah, I saw one picture of her online, I guess, that popped up like a couple years ago. It's like the only picture that people have seen, you know, in the last however many years.
Yeah.
And yeah, she had blonde hair.
She had blonde hair and it's still dyed. You can tell right away. It's like, no way, she still has that blonde hair. But even then, but yeah. So that's what she's known for, is being the blonde, you know, blonde haired, you know, woman. And she looks great, you know, I mean. I'm not a blonde guy, you know. I like my brunettes, you know. Shout out to the brunettes. But some of these blondes, you know, they catch your eye right away. And Angelica Chayin was one of them. I remember even as a kid, I was like, wow. Like, oh, wow.
We'll talk about it when we talk about the movie. But she had like a black, I love long black wavy hair. Oh, that's like, I love that.
Yeah, so and that, you know. Yeah, she's not always a blonde, some movies. But yeah, we'll get to that in a moment. And, and then, of course, you know, her being part of the sex comedy eras from the 70s and 80s, she worked with Victor Manuel El Güero Castro. He was an actor. He was a director, a writer, producer for these kinds of movies. And, of course, he worked with the producer Guillermo Calderon, which we all know as the godfather of, like, the rumberas and mm-hmm. the sex comedies, like the ficheras. Yeah. She worked with, of course, Rene Cardona and Rene Cardona Jr. And then, and, of course, you know, our homie Adolfo Martinez Solares.
Of course, Martinez. Shout out to Adolfo.
So that's who she worked with a lot. She was an exclusive actress for Frontera Films for many, many years. But of course, she still worked with other producers, of course. And
so did they contract actors and stuff, kind of like how
back in the day, like, they used to do that. So like her, she was one of their exclusive actors, and then Alfonso Sayas was, whom, by the way, she actually dated in real life.
Damn, lucky.
She was with him for quite a while, and they broke up, but they still worked together and they were still cool. I think even when Alfonso died, she actually went to his funeral and everything.
I think the picture that I saw is that was like around that time.
Yeah.
At least that's from the article that I read. It was like around that time is when people started asking, what the fuck happened to Angelica Chain? And, that picture surfaced.
Not a lot of people see her anymore or really talk about her. But when he died, they had the service. And, she popped up and kind of surprised people. It's like, whoa, what the fuck?
I mean, she literally just disappeared from the face of the earth. Yeah.
But there's a reason why, of course. So let's get into it. So, of course, 80s, she's everywhere. And in the 90s, she meets a Pepsi mogul and a hotel mogul by the name of Enrique Molina Sobrino. And so the rumor is that he was really jealous and everything. So he, married her, obviously, told her to retire. He didn't want her to be in movies anymore, getting naked.
It's amazing how a guy will objectify a woman and be like, I don't want you to do that no more. I love you. Like, get married to me only. Like,
he's very jealous. And he told her, just retire. Of course, him being wealthy, he's like, she doesn't have to work anymore.
That helps. Yeah.
And then one rumor I heard that he wanted a lot of her movies destroyed, or at least parts of the movies destroyed. Oh, like, he didn't want nobody to see that stuff anymore.
Oh, my God.
But of course, that never happened.
Thank God.
But that was something that he was trying to do at one point, was get rid of her movies, or her scenes at least.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine if he would have done that? We would have lost on so much, like...
I know. That's why I was, a little scared when I read about that. I was like, oh, what?
And it's not like he doesn't have the money to be able to do that. Like, the dude is a fucking billionaire.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, this guy's pretty intense. But, yeah, I guess he really loves her,
Or he bought her. I don't know.
I don't know. But they've been married ever since. Yeah. I think, 91?
I think 91 was her final credit. And after that, just completely vanished.
That was around the time she got married. Yep. And, let's see. Some selected filmography I picked out, movies for her, of her that she's in and that I think people should see, are obviously her first movie, Santa y Blue Lima with Dr. Frankenstein. The Sales, that was one that you pointed out, I see.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did you see that one?
It's kind of a hard movie to watch.
It is. Very, yeah. When I got a copy of the movie, I was excited. I was like, oh, fine, I can watch this fucking movie. I was like, But I remember the movie, though, for sure. Yeah. That's a good one. Sexo Me Da Risa, of course, Vecindario. I'm glad you pointed that one out. And I forgot to point that one out. Vecindario, she's beautiful in that movie.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. My goodness.
Is that her? Was that her first movie with Frontera Films?
Yep, that was her first film with Frontera Films, yeah. And then the other Albaniles, of course, which we talked about in the last episode.
Yeah.
Ratas de la Ciudad. Yeah, that was probably my first time when I saw her, actually, too. It was that movie, of course.
Ratas de la Ciudad?
Yeah, I was like, oh, she's really pretty. She caught my eye because she's blonde, and then, she only does one nude scene. And, of course, the nude scene that I saw as a kid, they blocked, and I was like, oh, man.
Amarna went straight to Pornhub. Ratas de la Ciudad.
This is before the porn, the online porn, so you couldn't find it. So you have to kind of just be like, man.
Hopefully you find it eventually.
Yeah. Verduleros, yeah. And then Hembras de Tierra Caliente, which was one of her last movies. La Tentacion with Enrique Gomez Vadillo. Have you seen that one, Troy?
I have not seen that one.
You need to fucking see. I'm going to have to send you
that. Yeah, you got to send me that one. I definitely want to watch it.
I don't know if that's her last or if Hembras was her last, but either one, those are great ones. Her final films are great.
Is it a sex comedy or is it more?
Tentacion is like a drama. Some people like to describe it as like a Pinku kind of type of film, oh, where shit, it's really okay. violent and like pretty intense. Like, yeah, and this one she plays like a woman that wins the lottery, and then she gets control of these guys. She has them working for her, and then they get tired of her being like a bitch to them. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Being an evil woman to them, you know. So they all band together. They're like, you know what? We're just going to take over. We're going to get her money, and then we're going to kill her.
Damn.
Yeah, it's a crazy movie, actually.
I definitely got to watch this.
And then Hembras de Tierra Caliente, and that one, she's just, like, pretty innocent in that movie. But then, like, people in that town, they think she's not so innocent. She's probably the one sleeping with a lot of husbands.
Oh, typical.
It's a great movie. I love that movie.
Just because she's beautiful and the men look at her, they think she's the one that's
exactly. But that's a great one. I love that movie. So, yeah, those are great ones. And yeah, those are the ones that I think people should see. And the one that we're going to talk about, that's a must-see, obviously. And we're going to talk about El Diario Íntimo de una Cabaretera from 1989, which was from Frontera Films. And like Joey said, yeah, she wears a dark wig in this movie.
She's got blonde hair, red hair. She's a brunette. She's got black hair. She's like the master of disguise in this movie.
Yeah. So the funny thing is... the blonde hair, of course, that's her natural quote-unquote hair. And the red hair is supposed to be a symbolism of sin and seduction. And then they took the idea from Lilith, from the Jewish legend. So she's the queen of hell, Lucifer's wife, and Lilith is supposed to have red hair as well.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, that's where they took it from. So sin and seduction, the red hair. Yeah, blonde, I can see it. Beautiful, innocent, you know, because her role right there. She's
colored famous. Eyes and shit, yeah.
So, yeah, let's break down that one now. So, let's go into it. And
that was what, 1980? This is 1989, right?
1989, yep. Yeah. That's when it came out. It looks like they shot it maybe a year before, maybe. That's what it looked like to me, at least. But I know the date of release was 1989. And this was directed by Gilberto Martinez Solares, written by Gilberto and his son, Adolfo. And it's a drama, it's a film noir, and then it's like a true crime kind of movie.
It kind of goes all over the place,
but it works out really good.
She really does play like a really sick, like a really good femme fatale in this
one. Yeah, exactly. So let's see, Joey points out, opens with a monologue about how Mexico City is huge, and this story takes place within the city, and how this is a story that can happen to absolutely anybody.
Which I thought it's kind of a funny intro, but it sets the tone.
It does set the tone.
México, como ustedes saben, es la ciudad más grande del mundo, con casi 20 millones de habitantes. En esta ciudad se viven las historias más increíbles e insólitas que nadie pueda pensar. Esto que van ustedes a ver es una historia de la vida real que vivieron personas que tal vez usted conoció.
I mean, because so right then and there you learn that, you know, it's Lina Santos' character,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so it starts off with this lady named Martha, played by Lina Santos. She's writing in her diary, which is intimate diary of a cabaret girl. That's the English title. So she's writing her journal about how she fell in love with this guy, the owner of the cabaret, Marcelo. He's like promising her a rich life, and then
her sweet nothings.
Yep, her singing career is gonna take off. Blah blah blah. You know, typical. You know, stuff like that.
Desde niña, mi mayor ambición había sido convertirme en una vedette famosa. Gracias a Dios lo he conseguido plenamente. Estoy feliz porque además estoy profundamente enamorada del dueño del cabaret donde actúo, a quien le debo el éxito de mi carrera. Él personalmente supervisa mis rutinas, dedicándome todo su tiempo a pesar de sus múltiples ocupaciones. Ay, yo no sé qué haría sin él, que ha sido mi apoyo, mi creador, mi todo. Es guapísimo. Está separado de su mujer y se va a casar conmigo. Se llama Marcelo.
Then when she tells him she's pregnant with his kid, she's like, whoa, no, I'm married. You know, I can't have this kid. You gotta abort it.
He immediately switches.
Yeah, he's like, no, he can't have this. No. And she's like, no, I want to, blah, 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 so.
¿Cómo que vas a tener un hijo mío?
Sí, ¿y que no te da gusto?
No, y hay que evitar que lo tengas. Tienes que ver a un médico.
Yo pensé que ibas a estar encantado.
No tenía por qué estarlo. Tú sabes bien que yo soy un hombre casado.
¿Pero que no estás separado? ¿Que no te ibas a divorciar?
No es tan fácil. ¿Ya fuiste a ver al médico? Él puede arreglarlo todo.
No, mi amor. Tengo 4 meses.
Algo hay que hacer.
He pretty much ghosts her, like he pretends that he left, if I recall. Yeah, he pretends he left, I remember. He says, like, oh, you know, yeah, he's not in town. But then she manages to see that he is never left. He's just with his wife now.
Was that actually his wife, though? Because it seemed like it was just another chick that...
I know.
I mean, you know, they never say it.
Just didn't seem like it. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I don't know. But supposedly he said that's his wife. And then, yeah, so she's pregnant, and then she's not pregnant with one kid. She's pregnant with two kids. Yep, so twins. Two girls. And their names are Jessica. What was it? Angelica?
Angelica and Jessica.
Yeah, Angelica and Jessica. And, of course, you know, she has the babies, and then she kills herself. Actually, the mom, Martha, she ends up not wanting to do this. You know, she can't live like this.
You think that was, like, the guilt of having to give up the twins for adoption, or was she just like... I don't want to do this anymore.
She just couldn't do it. So she kills herself in the bathtub.
Pretty gruesome. Yeah, she slits her wrist pretty deep.
And then the babies go up for adoption. And then one of them goes to a rich family. The other one goes to a kind of a wealthy family, too. But they're not really the greatest parents ever.
It's a broken household for sure.
Pretty much, yeah.
The fucking husband is this complete scumbag. Once they adopt her, and he's like, fuck you, I'm leaving. Like, I didn't want no damn kid. You wanted the kid. You keep the kid.
Yeah, it's funny when they adopt and they show the adoption scene. They have the parent, like, all happy. And yeah. Then the other ones are like, the dad's like, nah.
¿Y la niña? ¿Qué va a ser de la niña?
La idea de adoptarla fue tuya, ¿no? Así que encárgate tú de ella. Esa es tu bronca. A mí tú y la niña me valen madres.
Oye, espera.
It's a pretty funny montage because you go through child. It's like, you know, the when they get adopted.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, elementary school scene where, you know, it kind of cuts in between both of them. Then it goes to like middle school age.
Yeah, Angelica's doing good in school. Yeah, Angelica's doing good in school. She's in tennis, I believe.
She's doing tennis and basketball and all kinds of shit.
All kinds of stuff. And then
Jessica's like...
She's a troublemaker.
Because she grew up with no family, you know. Yeah. Obviously it's setting the tone for the movie, yeah. Right? She
got caught smoking, they say, and then they say that she's been reading these porn magazines.
Yeah, it was like pulp erotica or some shit.
Really bad girl, you know. And she has a mean little face, and the other girl's all smiling and stuff, you know. And yeah, it sets the tone from there, you know. Angelica gets married to what is he?
So I don't know if he like started off as a lawyer, but he ends up becoming the warden for a women's prison.
Yeah, a very good career. And then
we should say too that she's a lawyer herself. Yeah,
she's a lawyer.
On Helica's character, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Jessica, she's just trash.
She becomes mean. A schemer. Yeah, you know, she's
always jumping in front of cars, claiming she hilarious. Got hit. Yeah,
her racket is jumping in front of moving cars and trying to get them to pay her out instead of going through insurances, so she can just get cash.
Yeah, that's her whole fucking scheme throughout this whole time. It's like just jumping in cars,
and scheming, man.
That's all she does. Yeah, she's a liar.
There's like the doctor was like, we're going to have to operate on you. She's like, oh, fuck. So she just grabs all her shit and leaves the hospital.
Yeah. And then that's when she meets the coin guy, remember?
Yeah. That was Cesar Bono, wasn't it?
Yeah, Cesar Bono under a different voice.
Yeah. He does not have the na-na-na-na-na voice.
It's like a deep voice. And it's like, what? It just threw me off, too. I was like, what the fuck? Yeah, so she meets this like rare coin seller. She starts working with him. Of course, they fall in love. Well, he falls in love with her. She's just like, all right, I'll marry him. You know, I'll get money off him. So she's married to this guy that she doesn't even fucking like. Meanwhile, her twin is living the life, you know. She's working, you know, successfully with her husband in the women's prison, which is very corrupt.
We got to say to her husband is Pedro Infante
Jr. Yeah, so they're trying to, like, you know, clean up the prison, basically, because it's been so corrupted. You got women prisoners, they're getting favorable treatment.
Yeah.
There's drugs being run in there. Yep. And Pedro Infante's character, and then, you know,
he tries to go in there with an iron fist and
trying to clean it up.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a, you know, guard there that's corrupt, and he's all like, fuck. You know, he's going to ruin everything for us.
Was he working for like a cartel, or was he like a like a sex trafficker? Because I know he was trying to get one inmate to leave.
It's like half and half. Yeah, because remember some of the prisoner girls were like prostituting, remember?
Yeah, yeah.
So there was a prostitution ring and then there was like a drug ring. So yeah, it was with like a criminal because remember the main prisoner girl there, remember? She was the one that called the shots.
Yep, yep.
She's like dating like a mobster or whatever. Yep, or yep. Yeah, leader. Criminal leader.
Daniel, uno de los peores sujetos que he conocido en mi vida, era quien verdaderamente manejaba el penal. Hacía con las reclusas lo que le venía en gana. Y para él, Pedro y Angélica solo significaban un estorbo que había que eliminar.
Oye, ¿qué te dijo por lo de la mota?
¿Qué quieres que me diga? Lo puso en mi expediente y me tiene en observación.
Vieja pendeja. ¿Cómo es posible que tuvieras la mota ahí, tan a la vista?
Antes ni nos revisaban, hombre.
Es que el otro director sí era inteligente. Se dejaba untar. Pero este se cree San Francisco de Asís.
¿Y qué onda con mi asunto?
Aguántate tantito, mi amor. En menos de 15 días arreglamos esto. ¿A poco no te gustó la preciosidad que te traje?
A ti se te pagó mucha feria para que yo tuviera mi celda aparte. Y no para andar cuidando a tus pendejas.
¡Apaguen este radio, carajo! ¡No dejan dormir!
Ese pinche licenciado cree que va a poder conmigo. No sabe con quién se mete. Ese güey que va a saber de los penales. Hay que tener mucho valor.
¿Y qué piensas hacer, Dani?
Le voy a hacer la vida pesada. No va a aguantar aquí ni un mes. Vas a ver que no aguanta el paso. Véngase para acá.
So, yeah. So that's basically how it goes. You know, it's like trouble here with this girl, and this girl's trying to fix the trouble that's going on. And then, Jessica kills the coin collector husband. One day she's like, you know what? Fuck, you know, I'm just done. The guy's like, why are you always out? Blah, blah, blah. She fucking kills him with a fire poker.
Yeah, she fucks them up.
Yeah, and of course, to make it even more dramatic, so she leaves town. So it looks like she's not there, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
She gets a bomb set up. The bomb goes off when she's, like, vacationing. It's like, whoa, what?
Yeah, she goes through great lengths to get money off of men, and specifically men. That scene was hilarious. There's even the scene before that, like, when she starts to rob him, he's like, oh, I'll be back. I gotta go buy some ancient coins.
Yeah.
And so she's like, all right. She locks the door, starts stealing all his money from from the bank and his coins. And he comes back like, ha, surprise. I came with an engagement ring.
Oh yeah. That scene was hilarious.
And she's like, all right, well, fuck this fool. I'm just going to kill him.
Yeah.
¿Qué te pasó?
Nada. Pensé que ya te había sido.
No, lo que pasa es que pasé al baño y cerré la puerta para que no entrara nadie.
¿Qué hacen aquí estas monedas?
Es que las saqué para reacomodarlas. Pensé que se pueden ver mejor.
Entiendo.
¿Y tu cita?
La verdad es que no tenía ninguna cita. Pasé con mi joyero a recoger esto.
¿Y eso qué es?
Jessica, yo pensé que las mujeres eran superficiales y tontas, pero tú eres tan diferente.
Bueno, ¿a qué viene todo esto?
Quiero que te cases conmigo.
Es hermosísimo. La verdad, no sé qué decir. Gracias por proponérmelo. Está muy bonito.
So yeah, that's when she goes to Puerto Vallarta, and then she meets this younger guy, but then she ends up falling for the younger guy's dad, which is played by Hugo Stiglitz.
Oh, yeah.
And this is Don Martin, correct?
Don Martin.
Yeah, Don Martin is Hugo Stiglitz's character. Yeah, so she starts.
But before she does that, we can't skip over the threesome scene.
Yeah, so before any of this happens, there's a certain threesome scene that a lot of people, I think, remember. At least I know of. But good thing you brought it up because I forgot today.
There's no way we could not talk about
that. Yeah, so there's a scene where, you know, she's walking in the streets, these guys are trying to pick her up. And then they're like, yeah, come have a drink with us, you know?
She pulls out a fucking gat on these
fools. Yeah, like, first she's like, get the fuck. And then she's like, oh, you know, we're just fucking, you know, we're just trying to, you know, hang out. We're no trouble. But then she gives in. She's like, all right, I'll party with you guys. So they go to I don't know if it's a hotel or one of their guys' rooms. They start fucking macking on her. Vamos a la playa by Los Strauss starts playing.
Vamos a la playa.
Yeah. It plays an important part of the scene for some reason. But yeah. Yeah, so she's just getting at it with these two guys. And it's a pretty raunchy scene. I was just like, damn.
It's pretty steamy. I mean,
I was like, whoa.
It's like one step below a hardcore scene. Like.
I know. Yeah, literally. They like get on her and then both of them are on her. I mean, you don't see anything, obviously, but you know, it's more than enough to be like, damn, they're actually going at it with her.
They definitely,
yeah.
You know, let's say they were definitely excited to shoot that scene, those guys.
Oh, yeah, they were very excited, yeah. Well, I don't know about one of them. One of them was Enrique Gomez Vadillos' boy, but I'm not going to get into that right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We'll do that another time.
But one of those actors was a familiar face for me, but yeah.
Hola, güerita. ¿Por qué tan solita?
Ah, la verdad es que todavía no encuentro nada bueno.
¿Es muy peligroso andar en la ciudad?
No, ¿por qué lo piensas? Yo me sé cuidar solita.
Pues abusada, porque luego hay unos cabrones que se quieren pasar de listos.
¿Como ustedes?
No te pongas así. Solo estábamos bromeando.
No seas tan agresiva, mi amor. ¿Por qué no guardas esa pistolita y te vienes a pasear con nosotros, eh?
Bueno. Pensándolo bien, no están tan mal.
Vámonos.
Ahora sí, mi reina, vas a ver que con los otros dos te vas a dar una divertida.
A ver si como roncan duerme.
Te dije, pinche Carlos, ahora sí nos sacamos la lotería.
Nos vamos a comer a este cuero.
So, yeah, after that, you know, the threesome, the bombing, moving to Puerto Vallarta, meeting the new guy. She ends up marrying the older guy, obviously.
Yeah, so she basically, when she first goes to Puerto Vallarta, she meets Martin.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, baby, I love you, whatever. And then she sees Don Martin, who's mm-hmm. played by Hugo Stieglitz. And she's like, yeah, fuck this young fool. I'm going to go for this older guy because he's the one, obviously, with the money.
Yeah. And the younger guy is played by Roberto Palazuelos, one of his earlier roles.
And people would know him from Don't Panic, which Vinegar Syndrome released. I know all the horror fans are going to...
Yeah,
you know,
they'll recognize that face.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, the whole scene with Hugo, like the whole sequence with Hugo Stieglitz, like that part of the movie, I liked it a lot, actually. Like he's dressed up like when they get married, he has like, his whole charro outfit.
Yeah, that was a great scene. Yeah, and then the two guys from the threesome were there. it turns out they're friends with the son.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, that's the girl that robbed us. That's the one we told you about.
As friends do, right? They probably went to man, we hooked up with this fine ass girl.
So that already sets off, like, you know, Martin right there. He's like, oh shit, so she is really trouble. You know, she's probably just using my dad. So he's like trying to warn his dad, like, hey, you know, you shouldn't be with her. You know, why did you marry her? And this causes like a friction with him. It's like, you know, he's like, no, I'm in love with her. You know, I'm not separating from
as,
her.
As you know, as happens when you have a beautiful woman, you know, seductive.
Yeah.
Seducing, I should say.
So that causes, you know, them to separate. Like, he stops living with his dad and everything. But he's still trying to convince him, like, hey, you know, she's trouble. She's going to do something to you.
And that she does.
And she does. She poisons him.
Yeah, he asks her to get him a couple shots of mezcal, and she just puts arsenic in it instead.
Yeah. And then when he's arguing with his son about her, he's like, no, I'm not going to separate, blah, blah, blah. And then he fucking falls over. Remember,
He has like a heart attack or something.
He starts getting a heart attack, and then he trips over the stairs.
That stunt was sick, actually. Yeah. He does like a fucking flip over like the awning.
Yeah,
he flips over.
Yeah,
like,
it's so dramatic, too. It's like, damn.
Slow-mo.
Yeah. It's like, oh, my God. So she ends up inheriting, remember?
She inherits all his fortune.
Mm-hmm. She managed to get that, and then her son's trying to fight it. Like, nah, she's not going to get this. I need it. I deserve it, you know? So that kind of sets off the tone from there. And then the other side of the story is the prison. Corrupt.
Yeah. I will say, though, like, you know, this movie is kind of like a nature versus nurture is like the, you know, undertone. You know, one obviously grows up, you know, in a good household, becomes a lawyer and gets married. Yeah. The other one obviously, you know, she schemes her way up. But besides that, like, they really don't have any, like, the stories don't really intertwine. It's just like this happens, then this happens, and this happens.
Yeah, but then it kind of intertwines near the end when, you know, because so while this is all going, Claudio Baez, his character, he's the lawyer, the one that narrates the movie too. he's all obsessed with Angelica, I remember. He's you know, he really liked her. He was, you know, he was supposed to represent her in one of her car crash cases.
Well, he, so before that, you know, before, you know, Julio, you know, because he's, you know, Angelica's husband, sorry, you know. So throughout his tenure of being the warden, he knows that there's corruption. He's trying to snuff it out.
Yeah.
But he gets caught by the guards, right?
Yeah.
You know, they know that he knows, so they're trying to kill him, and they actually do when he finds out that there is a smuggling ring going on. And he gets fucking hacked in the face by like a meat hook, and he dies, and that's what sets up the romance between. The new guy, what was his name? Regardless, I forgot his name, but he plays, you know, the lawyer, like you said. And after Julio dies, that's when he's like, all right, he has his chance now with Angelica, and he's, you know, slowly.
He's credited as Licenciado Solares.
There you go, Solares.
So calm Solares,
And that's when he, you know, like you said, that's when he's, you know, snakes his way in. So.
Yeah.
¿Quién dio el pase de entrada y salida al reclusorio de este camión?
Fui yo, señor.
Este no es el camión que nos surte habitualmente la carne.
Cambiamos de proveedor, señor.
¿Con autorización de quién?
Señor, yo pensé que era lo mejor para que...
¡Abra el cofre, por favor! ¿Por qué estás tan nervioso?
No, yo no estoy nervioso para nada, señor. Ya estuvo suave, ¿no? ¿Qué tanta pinche desconfianza, carajo?
He's obsessed with one sister first, but then he meets this one, so he's like, oh, I'll get with her,
yeah,
but then he suspects that they're probably twins.
Well, yeah, that's right, because didn't she scheme him, like, or tried, or he represented someone that she,
yeah, exactly,
that she jumped in front.
That's how it began with him, you know. Right. He was like obsessed with her, and he was like looking for her, you know, and then like he suspects, and then he sees the picture of the girl, you know, the innocent one,
yeah, on
Helica. He's like, oh, that's probably her, you know.
Yeah.
Or maybe, I don't know. But then, you know, he starts drawing on the newspaper.
Yeah, 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 you're right.
Oh,
you're
this could be her. Maybe that's her twin. And then, yeah, you know, after that, near the end of the movie, it's like, yeah, they never really meet, the sisters, obviously. And then Solares just doesn't want to introduce them. Like, he knows that he probably could, but he just doesn't want to. He wants to keep it separate. Like, he wants to just start a new life with this woman.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. And finally, so... Jessica gets caught up in a murder, you know. She gets caught putting arsenic, you know, by Don Martin's son does like a, you know, a private autopsy or whatever. They find out he was poisoned. So she gets arrested, and
right when she was trying to scheme another rich guy.
I know, she already set her hooks into someone
that was
else
funny, right when she was about to.
But that's, you know, this is where the stories finally almost cross. Is that she gets arrested and gets sent to the same woman's prison that Angelica was now the warden. She becomes the warden,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she becomes the warden.
And then, but she's dating she doesn't see the sister, Jessica, get arrested, even though she's like, I don't even know if she remembers her name, but she's Hermana, Hermana.
Yeah, because she was the only one that knew she had a twin sister.
Yeah.
The other one didn't know she had a sister.
And And, you know, the payoff, it kind of sucked a little bit because I actually wanted to see them cross paths.
That's what I was hoping for, too. Some kind of crossover. But no, it just ends all weird. And then even with Solaris, like, he's just in the car all like, oh, shit.
Well, he saw her and was like, oh, yeah. Fuck, let me get in the car real quick.
The way it's so set up, it's so awkward. It's like, what the fuck? And then it just ends. I forgot what he says at the end, but yeah, and it's like, what, that's it? It's like, oh, man, come on. I was expecting a little bit more from that ending, but it was still a good movie, though. That's the thing. I do actually really like that movie a lot.
No, the movie is great. I just feel like it leaves a little bit to be desired, right?
Yeah.
Like I said, I really wanted them to cross paths.
Yeah, at least once. Yeah.
And I feel like that would have been perfect if she would have seen her and then realized, like, oh, she went down the wrong path. Mm-hmm. And now she's responsible for keeping her straight in the women's prison.
Yeah.
I feel like that could have been the ending right there.
Yeah, but no.
They just leave it on a cliffhanger. Not even a cliffhanger.
It's just weird, like I said. Like I told you, it's like Solaris sees her. He's like, oh, shit. And then gets her in the car, you know, and then he's like, all right, let's go.
And then they just drive off.
They just drive off while the other one's getting sent to the prison. But other than that, you know, it's really very fucking sleazy.
You know,
dramatic.
It's very dramatic. Yeah. And
the title's a little misleading, though. The Audio Intima.
Well, there's all of what, maybe 2 minutes of a cabaret scene
and a diary scene. Not so much of an intimate diary story, but you know.
But even that, like you said, the voiceovers are from Solares, so it's not even like. At one point, I thought we were listening to Marta's character, Lina Santos, and then I was like, wait, that's not even her talking. Like, who's having these flashbacks what's happening here?
Yeah, only once when she's talking, remember? It's like, oh, I met the guy.
That was it. Yeah.
After that, it's just, Solaris.
It just becomes Solaris narrating,
Yeah, that was weird, too, when you think about it. It's like,
I don't know, but it's the movie's so far different from anything that I'm used to of that era of Frontera films.
This was very different for them. This is like, I think, pretty much near the end of their sex comedy era. So this was like their first time trying something a little bit different. They're like, all right, let's start with the drama, but let's make it really criminal, you know, oriented and.
Let's keep the titties in there.
Oh, yeah, we got to keep the...
Let's go drama.
Yeah, we got to keep the nudity in there, of course. Tastefully, of course.
Yeah, Angelica Chain gets naked a lot in this movie. So for the Chain fans who, you know, are pervs, you know, you'll like this one.
Yeah, so if you like her as a blonde, she's there naked as a blonde because there are several scenes with her having sex with Pedro Infante.
Yeah.
And then there are scenes, of course, with her wearing the red hired wig. And then the dark hair.
That was my favorite, dude. Yeah. Oh, my God. The threesome scene
oh wow,
like I don't know,
I was just like, whoa, okay.
they went for it and
the song just added more character to it too.
I don't know why did they choose this, like it's so like it's not off-putting but it just feels like it's kind of out of left field.
And then the rest of the music was scored by Ernesto Cortazar.
But how much of that? Because there was some library in there.
Yeah, there was some library in there from Old George. Not a whole lot of Old George, but there's enough in there to know. If you know his music, you'll recognize it right away.
There was one song in particular that I was like, holy, like I think I have it.
Fly and Spider, maybe?
Maybe.
It might have been Fly, because I know that's the more common one was Fly and Spider.
Soon as I heard it, I was like, oh, fuck, I know. I was like, that's not Ernesto whatever his name was.
Yeah, Cortazar. But the rest was Cortazar for sure. And it's really dramatic and like eerie and haunting.
It's kind of like lo-fi, like stabbing, like like the song's really, like the chords really are abrupt, you know. It doesn't really, the chord progression isn't really very romantic or dramatic or anything, but it's very abrupt.
So I like that. I like the music angle there. And then, of course, them adding the Old George stuff. I was like, oh, cool. You know, right away I recognized it. I was like, oh, okay. I know these two songs that are playing.
Shout out to Medium Music.
Yeah, Medium Music.
More on that eventually. Yeah, you know, we'll get to that. Yeah, but dude, I think... is this? I mean, obviously, there's a tape of this that exists. But how available is this for people to watch?
Yeah, there's a tape. The DVD, I think, kind of still sells. Not really not much as before. It's on Picardia Nacional. It's finally streaming on there.
Oh, sick.
That was one that wasn't streaming there for a while. But yeah, finally it's streaming there. So.
And if you guys haven't signed up for Picardia Nacional yet, please do.
What the fuck are you doing? Yeah, cancel Netflix because... How much is Netflix? Like,
I don't know. It's like $17 now or something.
25, I need.
Oh, that's fucking crazy. I don't know.
Picardia is like $5, $6.
And you get all the comedy, the sleaze that you want.
Yep.
There's no Chain getting naked on Netflix.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, seek this one out. Both of these movies are actually really amazing.
Yeah, both of these movies are great, yeah.
And you know, I know one thing that someone told me was that, man, why do you guys speed run through these movies? But we just kind of want to give you a taste of it, you know? We want you guys to see the movie, you know? I don't want you to listen to us and then already know everything that happens in a movie, you know?
Yeah, if we do whole... Yeah, you're going to get bored.
Yeah, you know, no one wants a fucking scene-by-scene breakdown, you know?
Yeah, exactly. We're telling you what you're going to see and what you're going to definitely like from what you see.
And hopefully, you know, enough to entice you to watch these movies. Because they really are great. Yeah. And, you know, not to joke around about it, but they, you know, they do get dramatic. They do get very serious. You know, the horror stuff in Amantes is really good. The horror fans are going to love that.
Oh, yeah, that's... If you like horror, you're going to love this movie. No doubt. There's no bullshit here. This is probably one of the best Mexican 80s horror movies ever.
And, you know, unfortunately, that's the harder one to find, but, you know.
I'm telling you. Seek it out. You guys are going to fucking love this one. If you haven't already seen it, you're going to love it. If you have seen it, you're more than likely going to be a fan of it. I know I am. Joey's a fan.
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it,
We all fucking love this movie.
You know... I don't know when this is going to come out, but when it does, you know, do you want to give a little bit of a sneak peek of next month's episode that's going to kind of a tie-in with a live theatrical screen?
Mm-hmm. So near the end of April, we'll announce the date pretty soon, but near the end of April, we will be screening at the Frida Cinema, me and Mike. Joey will be there, hopefully.
Yeah, I'll be there.
Okay, he better be there. We're going to put him on the phone and be like, hey, you're here, bro.
You can get me on Zoom and project me on the screen.
Right. So, yeah, later in April, we're going to be screening a very violent movie. So I'm pretty glad this will be the debut for 2025. It's going to be a very violent movie. You're going to be very excited when you see it.
It's a wild one.
A very wild one. I'm telling you, very violent. No bullshit.
But I want people to know, too, that, you know, it's going to be kind of an interactive show, right?
So, yeah. So
you want some crowd participation for this.
Yeah, so I was telling Joy, like, you know what? I want people to be in this podcast. And by that, I mean is I want to hear people reacting to it. So we're going to be recording the interactions. And then after the movie's over, I want to hear from you guys. So if you guys buy a ticket and see this movie, stay tuned. I want you guys to stick around. And me and Joy are going to ask you, like, what you guys thought about the movie, what was your favorite scene, et cetera, et cetera. So,
and,
yeah.
And you guys will be on the episode. I'm going to edit it all in. And
So, yeah, I mean... I don't want to I don't want to spoil it yet.
Yeah, it hasn't been I want to say it so bad because it's a fucking banger that people do love this movie already.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah, it's gonna guarantee it's gonna please the crowd. Watch, you're gonna be like, damn, this is fucking awesome.
Well, I'm sure as soon as they hear the little snippet after this show, they're gonna know exactly what movie it is. Mm-hmm. So,
so again, once we announce it, buy a ticket, and we're gonna be there. We're gonna be recording you all and.
And show up, support, man. You know, I know Armando enjoys doing this, and I fucking love doing it. So thank you for, you know, actually inviting me, Armando, to be a part of this because it has been fun. And, you know, we do want more people to be involved. You know, we're working on getting more interviews. We're working on tons of stuff. So, you know, keep hitting us up with your ideas. Please, you know, tell everybody about the show. Tell your tia, your tios, your primas, whoever.
Yeah. Yep. Subscribe to us. Give us a rating. Leave us a review. Yeah, you know, be cool, you know. Hit us up whenever, you know.
Yeah, don't be a lurker, man.
Yeah, don't just be a lurker.
Like, yeah. Don't just watch the stories and don't interact, you know.
Yeah, if you guys have a question for any of us, just hit us up, you know. Like, we're here.
Yeah.
we're not mean or anything. Like, nah, we'll fucking respond. Well, I mean, I kind of take long to respond now, but I get bombarded with messages sometimes. So I'm just like, I'm like twisting around. I'm like, sorry guys, but no. Either way, like I said, we'll respond to you guys. We're not gonna leave you unread. We're not gonna thumbs you up. We want to talk to you guys. So yeah, hit us up. And like I said, when we do this episode, be there, and I want to hear you guys talk.
End of April, guys. Keep an eye out for the calendar.
Yeah,
keep it open.
We'll announce it pretty soon. If it's not this week, it'll probably be the week after. But yeah, we'll announce it for sure soon.
Maybe I'll get like a fake a wig of like some Liberty spikes or something.
I don't know what I want to. I don't know. What should I wear that day?
I don't know. We'll figure it out.
I'll bring a flamethrower.
Roasting fools. All right. And with that, let's end it. Here's a little trailer for next month's episode and the screening that Armando and Mikey are going to be doing at the Frida Cinema. So, peace.
See you later.
Próximamente estrenaremos...
¡Quieto, maldito policía!
Todos contra la pared. El que se mueva, se muere.
Perro polizonte. Creíste que te habías librado de nosotros, ¿verdad? ¡Atrás! ¡Loco!
Sí.
¡Vikingo! ¡Pantera, ya saben lo que tienen que hacer! ¡Es tuya!
¡Vamos!
¡Pálale! ¡Suelto!
¡Pálale!
¡Suélteme!
¡Suélteme!
¡Suélteme! ¡Cállate! ¡Suélteme! ¡Gato! ¡Suélteme! ¡Llévatelo!
¡Cálalo! ¡Vámonos, Fernán! ¡Puedo ver ahorita, polizonte!
¡Suélteme!
¡Ven acá, bebé!
Bonita fiesta, policía.
Ya estuvo, chavos.
¡Mamá! Muchachitos, ya saben lo que tienen que hacer.
¡Échate!